Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, April 11th. I'm Ray Graff. Today's program about birds. And in the studio to answer your questions are Rich Guthrie and Tom Lake. They're here to answer all of your questions about the winged creatures. The number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email your questions to voxpop@wamc.org. That's VoxPop at WAMC.org. But again, our number is 800-348-2551. It's spring. Finally, it feels like spring. And the birds are outside my window waking me up very early. I'm sure it's happening to you. We'll find out what kind of birds they are after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're discussing birds on the show today, and we always welcome back our resident avian expert, Rich Guthrie, to the program. Today, Rich is joined by Tom Lake. Rich is retired from the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. He's a board member of the State Ornithological Association and the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. Tom Lake is a consulting naturalist for the DEC's Hudson River Estuary Program. Our number to call is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you may email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Rich and Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ray.
Spring has finally sprung.
Nice. Here we are.
Spring is sprung in certain parts of the watershed, but if you go up in the Adirondacks right now, you'll be walking in the woods through 2 feet of snow. If you go to Manhattan, you're in shirt sleeves watching the spring flowers.
This is an exciting time for people who watch birds, though.
Definitely. It's the beginning, the opening of the curtain for the spring show.
Mm.
And they're down there waiting for their cue.
And Tom, you work with the DEC and the River Estuary Program. This is also a pretty big time for eagles.
Oh, it is. Eagles are one of those iconic animals that we have in the Northeast, along with coyotes and loons and moose and river otters. And they're the kinds of animals that remind us of the time depth and when times were gentler and less crowded in the North Northeast. But eagles, you know, we lost our eagles from 1897 to 1997. We did not have a baby bald eagle born in the Hudson Valley.
Mm-hmm.
For various reasons. There were bounties, there were toxins, all sorts of bad things were going on. And then in 1997, after 100 years, we had the first eagle that was hatched and fledged in Greene County. And fittingly enough, it was on the 4th of July. We thought we had hit the lottery with that one. It was so appropriate. And now from the Capital District to New York City, we've got at least three dozen bald eagle nests, perhaps more. In the entire watershed, we've got 50 or 60 bald eagle nests. And this is the season when the eggs are hatching and the nestlings are being fed by mom and dad. So it's an exciting time of the year for those of us who follow the eagles.
But yet there's a certain sensitivity, if you're out looking for eagles, that you need to have. In other words, they need their space.
Well, eagles are very perceptive, and oftentimes people think you're sneaking up on an eagle. An eagle knows when you get out of bed in the morning. I mean, they really are very clever with that. And they have an alert distance of about 250 meters and a flight distance of about 125. So those numbers don't mean a whole lot because every eagle nest, every eagle is different. But you should respect a suitable distance between you and them to not make them worry. And so when you go out looking for eagles, you bring your optics along, you bring binoculars, you bring spotting scopes, so you don't have to get close to these birds. A lot of people go out birding think they have to get right on top of these birds. It makes them nervous. You're going to miss whatever view you wanted because they're going to take off on you. So if you keep in your mind that there's a respectable distance.
And what is that respectable distance?
It depends on the eagle and the situation. If they're on a nest, you probably don't want to be within a couple hundred yards of them, maybe even more. If it's just a lone bird sitting in a tree, you can probably get a little bit closer. But again, it's the threatening posture that you present. So you try. And it's a skill. If you've been following eagles for years, you sort of sense what's appropriate and what isn't.
And I might add that we have enough. We have enough great, great, terrific cover page photographs of eagles. You don't have to be that master photographer or bird watcher to go out there and look at the eagles even better this time around. We got them. Save the Eagles the energy and get your distant shot or just get your mind's eye picture and let them be.
Rich Guthrie is here today. Also, Tom Lake. It's the Bird Show on Vox Pop, and the number is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Kathy in Seward, New York. Kathy, you're on.
Hi. I'm so glad you're talking about Eagles because that's what I wanted to talk about. You're talking about the Hudson Valley. I'm in the northwestern foothills of the Catskills, and we've got definitely an eagle nest and at least a pair of eagles right here in the town of Seward.
Well, that's terrific. You know, the eagles are occupying just about every available niche that's out there that they can while maintaining a respectable territory. And yet...
Yeah, you can see their nest in this big pine tree that's kind of isolated next to an open field. And right in the village of Seward, there's a pond that's backed up from a creek. So they love to go fishing there, and I live up on the hill, and I can see them circling around the pond below me, and it's just a beautiful sight.
Isn't it great? We're so fortunate that we have been able to catch this act in time.
And a friend of mine was up here at the back of my house, and I've got, you know, a couple of old trees, you know, going up, and he was just, you know, there, and one was in an old tree, and it flapped over his head. He couldn't believe how huge it was and how he heard the flaps, and he said three flaps, and he was gone to the valley. Whoosh, 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 and off he went.
You know, one of the magical aspects of bald eagles that if you study them for a while, you'll notice this for yourself. There are times when an eagle will let you walk right under them as they're perched. If you see them, then that's different. They might take off. But eagles can sense.
Yeah, he didn't see it right away. Yeah. And then he just heard it. I guess it got a little, nervous and said, I better get out of here.
It's almost like eagles can sense something about you, whether you present some kind of a threat. Because I've taken groups of students under a tree, and we're almost through, and a student says, "Hey, look up!" And 20 feet over our heads is an eagle. And the eagle didn't move at all because we didn't present a threat. Mm. But you have to be careful because.
But at other times, you could discourage that eagle from setting up its territory where you really would like to have them be.
Are eagles very territorial?
Yes.
So there will only be one pair in any given area.
That's correct.
How big is that area?
Depends. On the food supply, the available habitat and food supply. They got to anticipate their needs for the season. Mm. And somehow they can sense, as other birds do. You know, as many robins as you have in your park nearby will depend on the available food and the amount of competition.
What's the top eagle, the toughest eagle in our region?
Say that again?
The top eagle. I don't know how you measure
toughness.
The most dominant.
We have two eagles. We have the bald eagle and the golden eagle. The bald eagle is our national bird since 1782. The golden eagle pretty much passes through. There's a little bit of nesting maybe in the area, but for the most part, they're from up in Quebec and Ontario. Some people have put forth the notion that the golden eagle is somehow stronger and fiercer and more everything than a bald eagle. I haven't noticed that myself. What do you think, Rich?
No, they're totally different kinds of birds. They're not that closely related. The name it sounds the same, but they're really different. The golden eagle is more related to the red-tailed hawk,
mm-hmm.
and the bald eagle is in a class of its own, followed by several cousins around the world, from Africa to Siberia, but the golden eagle is a tough bird. But their food source is different than the bald eagle. They're more active in pursuing live prey, whereas the bald eagle is happier going after things that are served on a dinner table.
That's really true. Yeah, golden eagles are more. I see them more as an upland eagle, and bald eagles are birds or raptors of big water. If you were to look at their menu, they'd have fish and waterfowl, things that are not necessarily difficult. Whereas a golden eagle will go after mammals in upland areas, just a little different.
We're joined today by Tom Lake and Rich Guthrie. It's the Bird Show on Vox Pop today. The number is 800-348-2551. And let's get one more call in before the first break. And Kate in High Falls. Kate, you're on.
Yes, thank you so much for taking my call. It's great to hear that the eagles are thriving. So I'm calling today because a couple things have crossed, come to my awareness recently that are interconnected, and I wanted to ask if you could shed some light on it from your studies, you know, like in college or for your degrees. And the one is that I heard that in France they've put out the alarm that the bird population in general is down 30%, and in at least one case, it was said that it's down 70%. So, and the other thing that I've been trying to study, it's scientific. It's a 47-page publication called Bees, Birds, and Mankind Destroying Nature with Electrosmog. And it goes into the biological relationship of the bees and the birds with the background electromagnetic fields of the earth. Okay. And it says that it's got a substance called chitin in the feathers that has to do with the bird detecting these fields and thereby being to being able to navigate.
Okay, that's likewise, a very long lead-in, but we only have about 30 seconds for these guys to actually answer the question.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll hold on. Okay. I'll hold on.
Great, go ahead,
okay,
guys.
Okay, so there are some definite factors out there that are changing in the visible and also the invisible environment. And things we understand, that we know about and understand, and there's a lot of stuff that we really don't know. And the whole business of electromagnetic radiation and bird navigation is a totally interesting field, and it's something that I've written about in the past. And I think we need more work in that to study that. And as far as the birds in Europe are concerned, there's a lot of stuff going on there, from pesticide usage to herbicides to actual hunting of live birds in many of the migration routes where there's a huge concentration. So we have to get our grip on the reins and rein that stuff in.
Rich Guthrie is with us today, Tom Lake as well. It's The Bird Show, 800-348-2551 is the number, and we'll be right back.
Support for WMC comes from Capital Roots, making fresh local produce accessible to Capital Region neighborhoods. Healthy, affordable food should be a right, not a privilege. To learn more, capitalroots.org. Patricia Dalton Fennell, producer, working to bridge the arts, science, and service, announcing Jazz Colleagues events throughout the WMC listening area, performing this Friday at Athos Restaurant, patriciadaltonjazz.com. The Doan Stewart School, Rensselaer, New York, an early childhood through grade 12 co-educational day school, emphasizing creative and critical thinking, social responsibility, and discovery for more than 150 years. DoanStewart.org. George Propane, Goshen, Massachusetts. Family owned and operated for over 75 years, serving Western Massachusetts with propane and full-service heating and plumbing installation, services, and deliveries. GeorgePropane.com. And Fort Hill Auto Body, Amherst, Massachusetts. Locally owned and operated since 1997, providing auto body repair, detailing, painting, and glass replacement, a proud supporter of public radio, FortHillAutoBody.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, number is 800-348-2551. It's birds today on the show. Rich Guthrie is here, and Tom Lake, and I got to tell you, if I try to push you along a little bit with your questions today, it's because we have so many calls. The lines have been loaded since minute one. We want to get to as many people as possible. So if possible, be succinct with your questions, and we'll try to move it along. Now, before we get to a couple of emails, Tom wanted to sort of address some of the other things that are going on along with the Eagles coming in spring.
Yeah, our bald eagles, as I mentioned earlier, this is the season when the eggs are hatching. These eagles generally lay their eggs around the first week of March. They hatch around the first week of April. And then between 72 and 90 days after they hatch, they fledge or they leave the nest for the first time. Those 72 to 90 days when they're in the nest and they're unable to fend for themselves, the adults have to go out and bring food. And it's not a coincidence that they are hatching and their need is so great when a great source of protein is coming in from the ocean right now. These are the river herring, also American shad, but they're sometimes a little too big to bring into a nest. But the river herring are here, and they'll they'll be here by the millions. And they're just the right size. The adults go out and catch them. I've already seen one photograph of a river herring, probably an alewife, being brought to a nest. Mm-hmm. And to further develop that idea, that picture of what's going on, harbor seals from the ocean. You have to remember, we are connected to the sea, so you should never be surprised when something different shows up in the river. But here are harbor seals in the Hudson River right now, and they're feeding on the herring, and the eagles are feeding on the herring. And in fact, in Greene County right now, we have an Arctic seal called the harp seal.
Huh.
And this is, again, this is a scenario that has been going on for a long time. It's nothing new.
Okay. Rich, now I know that every organization has events going on now.
Yes.
Too many to mention.
Way too many. Now's the time really to get out there. If you're new at getting out in the field and looking for birds and other interesting things, do it now, because first of all, there's no leaves on the trees, so you're going to see right through. You're going to have X-ray vision out there. And then you got a small number of players showing up on the field, and soon to be followed by a rush of different species.
Sure.
So get out, learn the simple ones, the common ones, the local ones, and then as they come in, you'll be that much wiser. The way to do that is to find your local bird club. Whether you're in Dutchess County, New York, in the Waterman Bird Club, or down in the Hudson Valley, get online and Google a bird club in your area. Look at their field trip programs and sign up and get out there. A lot of them offer them free for newcomers, and I urge you to join the group and get out there. And just to follow up with what Tom was saying, you know, here in New Baltimore, we have the New Baltimore Conservancy, and in cooperation with New York DEC and the National Marine Fisheries, we are conducting eel surveys.
Ah.
So if you want to get your hands cold and wet and dirty and get out there and get up knee deep in the water.
You're not handling the eels, are you?
You actually
really are.
Yes. We're surveying the eels as they're coming up the river. And the reason for that is it's an important survey to determine the status, get a baseline data on the status of eels. Very, very important to know.
I mean, eels don't mind being handled?
Oh, they do.
They do.
They do.
Okay.
But this is a gentle, it's very non-intrusive. You're just gathering them, counting them, and releasing them.
All right.
New Baltimore Conservancy online. Check it out.
Thank you, Rich. This one came in via email from Ian and Saugerties. I'm pretty sure I saw a flock of five bald eagles lumbering off a branch and flying off together. I've seen bald eagles before here in Saugerties and out west, so I know how they look, take off and fly. I couldn't get a great look at them, but they were definitely large brown eagle-like birds with white heads. Do they fly together in groups, or did I see a different kind of bird?
You saw the bald eagles.
Okay.
I'm going to be confident in saying that. While they're not nesting in the wintering quarters and sometimes in migration, they will gather in small groups at favorable locations. I've seen as many as 40 of them in places on the Hudson River. And you go down into the Bear Mountain of West Point area in New York, and you could see up to 100 bald eagles in the wintertime.
It kind of depends on when this observation was made. If it was in the winter, you'd have that many. Right now, the Hudson Valley is playing host to birds from the areas north and west, north and east of here, Quebec, Ontario, and the Canadian Maritimes. Those are birds that had to come here to spend the winter because those areas freeze up. But they're heading back now. When you first read that, I'm thinking bald. I'm thinking, well, turkey vultures are usually in large numbers in trees, and their heads are bald. And sometimes the light can make them look bright, too. But they easily could have been bald eagles as well.
All right. I'm comfortable.
This one is from Alexandra in Latham. At night sometimes last summer, I could hear an owl, and it can be pretty loud. Will it be back this summer?
Yes.
And are there any concerns I should have for safety or letting my cat outside?
Keep your cat in. Simple. A great horned owl will relish the idea of finding your cat out there at night.
And you'd like that, wouldn't you, Rich?
Hey, listen, you know, turnaround's fair play.
Yeah.
You know that song sparrow and that little yellow throat that the cat had for breakfast the other morning? Hey. Leave the cat out, and there's the consequences.
Don't be bitter.
I'm not. I'm just saying, this is a real world out there.
This is public radio.
It's a jungle out there.
All right. Rich Guthrie is our guest. Also, Tom Lake today, 800-348-2551. Raymond in Woodstock. Raymond, you're on.
Thank you, gentlemen. Last night, I had a bird that came into my house. It was hanging around under the eaves outside the front door, and I managed to get it out. But what's a safe way to get a bird out of a house once it comes in? And what's a good way to discourage them from hanging out around the front door under the little roof?
Well, if it's at nighttime, here's a good way to do it, is have a hat or a net, preferably, or a towel, but sometimes a towel is a little too heavy. But turn the lights out and put a flashlight onto one spot. If you shine that flashlight onto one spot with it, when it's totally dark elsewhere, and the bird goes in, starts flying around, it'll look to land on that spot. So you know where to prepare to catch the bird on that tabletop.
Huh.
The bird will look for a place to land, and where the light is shining is probably where it's going to settle down, and then you're ready to catch them with a hat or a net, a fish net, and then carefully take them outside and let them go. In the darkness, they'll adjust. They'll find a way into a safe tree.
This actually might have been a house wren that has a nest in front of the house.
Well, it could be, but so many birds get through an open door.
All right, Raymond, thank you very much for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. We're joined today by Tom Lake and Rich Guthrie, and Pat in Saratoga is next. Pat, you're on.
Hi, yes. I have a question about bluebirds.
Mm-hmm.
We have some in our backyard. We have two pair, and they come to our feeder year-round. We have a bluebird box, and in the spring they nest, or one of the pairs nests and all this. In the fall, they leave the nest, and we clean it out. If they're around all year at our bird feeder, where do they go after they leave the nest?
They go locally. A lot of bluebirds will find a safe place. Some bluebirds will migrate to New Jersey. Other ones will find a safe place in your neighborhood, not far, where there's shelter and there's food. So many of them hang around through the winter.
Do they, like, gather together, or is it just the pairs? Or
no, they'll find others of their kind and gather in small groups. I hate to call them flocks because it's so loosely organized, but they are congregations of eagles. Bluebirds.
Oh.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Very interesting.
Yes.
Thank you, Pat. We appreciate the call. Over to Bill in Clarksville. Bill, you're on.
Yeah. My son lives in Gilderland in a development that has a lot of large pine trees, and I noticed vultures roosting in the pine trees towards evening, and when I turned the binoculars on them, they looked like black vultures. And when I went to the Peterson book, which admittedly is about 12 years old, it said this is far too north for them.
Well, Peterson... Peterson's book was right about that 12 years ago. The black vulture is a new kid on the block. With the parade of birds moving from south to north, the black vulture is right in there amongst them. He's there, and not only did they moved in with a vengeance. Where there was one or two, there's now 10 or 12, and where there was 12, there's now 20. And that will continue to grow. And I suspect they'll continue to expand their range northward up into the Champlain Valley and perhaps into southern Quebec.
These are some of the subtle indicators that may be answered by the effects of climate change.
They're interesting birds. They don't seem to be too rattled by people.
You're darn right. They're very, let's say, assertive.
Yeah.
And at times aggressive. And
toward people?
If they've got some chow down on next to the path, and you want to get by them, they will not yield.
Really?
They'll stand there and perhaps try to discourage you.
That is very interesting. Yeah, has that happened to you, Rich?
Not I, but I've heard of cases where they become almost, a genuine nuisance. But it is what it is.
How does one defend oneself against a black vulture?
Just keep walking.
Stay away from roadkill, for one thing.
Oh, yeah. Rats, really?
Yeah. You know, vultures are just amazing. They have no feathers on their head. And that's an adaptation to survival. If you spent most of your life sticking your head inside rotting carcasses, you wouldn't want feathers on your head either.
Yeah, bloody mess.
Yeah, and they're very poor flyers compared to an eagle or a falcon. And it's fun to watch them on really cold days try to get up off their roosts. they need a certain amount of lift from thermals. And many of them don't get out of bed till noon each day.
Hmm. Well, you know what? That's not a bad idea.
Yeah, right.
Let's go to Elia in Shutesbury. Elia, you're on.
Hello. Hi there.
Hi.
This is Elia. Can you hear me?
Yes, yep. We can hear you.
Great. So 2011, I was in Amherst near Puffer's Pond and couldn't figure out what the sound was. It was in July, and it sounded like baby birds, but it sounded like an eagle, but not quite an eagle. So I Googled it online and got some recordings, and I listened to it on my computer at the same time that they were actually doing their call. So I think I was able to verify that we indeed have some eaglets over there in Amherst near Puffer's Pond. So I just thought that was pretty exciting and wanted to
yeah,
share that.
You know, eagles don't sound like eagles.
No. What do you mean?
They do not.
No, it sounds like somebody tickling a chicken more so than a majestic eagle.
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
That's
right. Yeah.
Right.
So when you're on there, when you hear when you see the eagle soaring in the background and you hear the audio that's behind it on the TV or in the movie, it's usually a red-tailed hawk because they sound
a little
more majestic.
Oh, that's funny. Well, yes. Elia, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. Make that sound again, Rich. Oh, yeah, that's worth the price of admission right there. Let's go to David in New Paltz. David, you're on.
Yeah, hi. Question for you. I have not seen that many chickadees at my feeder this winter, as I usually do, and in talking with my sister-in-law up in northern Washington County, she said she hasn't seen any this year. I was just wondering if something was going on.
Well, you're not alone in that. And going back into last fall, we've been getting calls here, and I've been seeing it myself. The chickadee numbers are not near their population curve right now. But have faith. They'll be back. It happens in nature. There are cycles, and it seems to be region-wide that the black-capped chickadee numbers are kind of like waiting to come back again.
I've seen that, and others have told me the very same thing. One thing you have to remember, in nature, populations have cycles of abundance and scarcity, and what is the American eel we were talking about before is a good example of that. And so if you wait long enough.
And turkeys around here.
Turkeys are come and go. The ruffed grouse is even a better example of that because they have, well, it's kind of hard to say now because they've been displaced so much by so many other things. But Dr. Meng back in the day used to do this survey on the population of goshawks and the relative population of ruffed grouse. Mm-hmm. And you could see a direct correlation between the two population numbers.
Interesting. Our guests today, Tom Lake and Rich Guthrie, and you at 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. We go to Catherine in Troy. Catherine, you're on.
Hi there. Two quick questions.
Sure.
Bluebirds. I put out my first bluebird house this year. I've had a pair of bluebirds come and check it out. The female flies in and out. The male can't seem to get in and out. It doesn't look like anyone has nested in there. So how is there a way to entice or make it a more wonderful place? I have the hole facing away, so it's got space. I asked my bird store, and they said make sure the hole for the birdhouse is not facing another tree, that they've got space to fly into.
Well,
and the second question is, mm-hmm. Has anybody figured out with a bird bath how to keep the birds from pooping in it all the time and having the dirty water?
No.
Or just clean your...
You can't house train them. You can't house... You know, they're wild birds, and usually they're by a stream, and it just self-cleans.
Sure.
So you got to just take care of that. It just goes with the flow, so to speak. As far as a bluebird nest box, check inside, make sure that it's not occupied by a family of mice that have moved in. Sweep it out. And then the other thing is to be sure that the hole is the right size. The female is slightly, ever so slightly smaller than the male. If the hole is too small, it got to be an inch and a half. It may be difficult there. And perhaps also I would check. And regarding the orientation of the nest box, yours is already in place. Don't worry about that. The bluebirds will typically, naturally, find an old woodpecker hole. And the least concerned about the orientation of a nest hole would be the woodpeckers.
It's more the size of the hole.
The size is critical.
So I bought it as a bluebird house, but don't assume that whoever made it got the hole size right.
That's right. Inch and a half is the recommended size. And then clean it out. It may be something going on inside that they're finding not attractive.
Catherine, thank you very much for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. We go to Connecticut and Angela. Angela, you're next.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
Hi, Rich. Hi, Tom. My name is Angela. I'm a wildlife rehabilitator for birds in Connecticut. And I just want to take this quick opportunity, since we're talking about eagles, to remind our viewers, and might be preaching to the choir here, but please do not poison your mice and your rats, and please do not leave your fish hooks in your fish that you throw away, because when the eagles come down and grab those fish, we're finding so many hooks in the guts of beautiful eagles.
Ow.
So I just wanted to share that as a rehabber.
Okay, thank you very much.
And I do have a question for you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, good points.
The question is, thank you. I have heard that the reason homing pigeons are able to find their way from 100 miles is that they have these magnetic sensors in their beaks. Do you know if this is true for, say, barn swallows who come back miraculously year after year to my barn, and I just wonder, how do they know to do it? How do they know to find it with all of the air pollution, I mean, light pollution, electrical
Well, let me get to you,
that we're having?
To your question right off the bat, is the answer is yes. They follow the geomagnetic fields of the Earth and find their way home. Same as some certain fish do, find their way back to their streams.
Wow.
The salmon and perhaps a wider array of different animals locate their nest, their den, their home birth area. So the answer is yes. And with all of this electromagnetic pollution.
The sensor's in the nose, not the feathers.
Don't know where it is. I suspect it's in the head someplace, not the feathers. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you, Angela. We appreciate that call. That's very interesting. And we are told that the magnetic poles will shift at some point soon. And I wonder what that will do for migrating.
That's been going on. And Bob Berman will be able to tell you more about that. But
they move around, but they're actually going to flip.
That's a whole different phenomenon. And I don't know what the effect. I don't know if that happens as in the flick of a switch or if that happens over a course of millennia.
It's unclear. It happens every X number of tens of thousands of years, and there haven't been mass extinctions tied to them.
Well, as far as we know. And then on the other hand, there have been a lot of other changes in a shorter time frame, such as the receding of the glaciers that the birds have been able to adapt over the 12,000 years since the glaciers covered our area mile thick and ice.
All right, Tom Lake is our guest, also Rich Guthrie, and you at 800-348-2551. We'll take a quick break and then hit the home stretch on The Bird Show.
Support for WAMC comes from the Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, presenting its 6th annual Lake George Hikeathon, July 5th. Early bird registration until April 30th, lakegeorgehikeathon.org. Innovative Therapy Solutions, a therapy and wellness practice now offering acupuncture for children, teens, and adults to relieve stress, anxiety, depression, and chronic pain. Information available at 413-528-8888. And Hooked Seafood Company, Latham. Fresh seafood retail market and kitchen with scratch-made lunch and dinner menu, raw bar, lobster rolls, whole belly clams, fish and chips available, hookedseafoodinc.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, and our number is 800-348-2551. Birds today, and Rich Guthrie, and also today, we're joined by Tom Lake, who is consulting naturalist for the DEC's Hudson River Estuary Program. And Tom, you wanted to mention just a little follow-up to our last caller.
Yeah, the last caller mentioned fish hooks as a problem for fish, and in bald eagles was specifically what she said. But I have seen it in all kinds of birds that are foraging along the rivers, along the ocean, osprey, gulls, eagles, and it's not uncommon to find fish hooks or just tangles of monofilament fishing line that's left behind. Anglers need to be a little more aware of this, and they have to clean up their messes when they leave, and not just take the hooks and stuff and leave it on the beach, because sooner, oftentimes, they'll have a piece of bait on it. And that's all it takes for a gull or some other bird to pick it up, and now they're hooked.
And if you're walking along a beach shoreline, if you see a pile of monofilament, grab it, roll it up, put it in a pocket, or carry a bag that you can store it in until you get back and safely dispose of it.
All right, well, good advice. This one came in from Adrian in New Paltz. Spring's coming, but I've been looking at electric units which keep bird bath water thawed all winter, averaging 40 watts to run. a needed item, or am I just overly concerned for their welfare? Water's important, but wife says the snow is just fine.
That's the snow is fine.
Yeah.
The whole idea, I endorse these water heaters for the bird bath in the winter. We don't need it now, but in January and February, it's a good thing. And basically what it is just making it more convenient for the birds and making it easier for you to watch them.
But you just said the snow is just fine.
Oh, it's just fine. The birds will not go thirsty in the winter. There's plenty of opportunity for them to find moisture enough to supply the water needs.
Okay. This one came in from Christine in Watervliet. I had an awning installed over my deck off my kitchen. A nest is being built in one corner of the awning against the house. Love that the birds picked my street to build on, but should I move the nest or what would you recommend?
Well, it depends on the species of bird. Some of them, it's actually illegal to disturb the nest.
Really?
The house sparrow is not protected, but birds such as the house wren or the Carolina wren or the house finch, it's not permitted.
How would the average homeowner know?
A bird guide. On the other hand, you know, you've got to have a functional units to your house. If they're nesting in an inconvenient place, then operate the functional aspect of it. Discourage a bird from being there, but don't wait too long. You don't want to have them laying eggs and incubating and having babies in the nest, and then you're faced with a bigger dilemma.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Let's go back to the phones. Tracy in Cobleskill. Tracy.
Hello. Yes, I grew up in Cobleskill, and then in my hippie days, I went up to Southeast Alaska to visit friends and ended up living there for 35 years.
Yeah,
lucky man.
So I've seen lots of bald eagles and lots of ravens and blue herons and everything else. I moved back here a few years ago. My friends would say when I was leaving, well, what are you going to miss? You know, the mountains, the glaciers. It's like, no, I'm going to miss the ravens. And first day at my father's house, there was a pair of ravens.
Hey, there you go. You know, go ahead. I'm sorry.
They got a nest somewhere up on the hill behind. I've never found the nest, but I get to hear them and see them.
Well,
doing all their aerobatics.
Well, lucky man, you have some that are nearby that you can observe them. And they ravens. Another one that have made a dramatic return. I'll call it a return because they were once in the area. They disappeared for various reasons, but now they're back. And again, nature abhors a vacuum. There is a vacuum waiting to be filled, and the ravens are in there. Now they're found all throughout the Adirondacks, down into the Hudson Valley. They've actually nested on a railroad bridge in the Hudson Valley, right along the Hudson River. Remarkable. They're just having a great old time.
Yeah, Tracy, you mentioned eagles in Alaska, and that brings to mind something we can say about our bald eagles here. Most of our bald eagles can trace their ancestry.
They came from there.
Yeah, well, most of our eagles can trace their ancestry to Alaska. In 1976, we were in a situation in Hudson Valley, in most of New York State, where we had no bald eagles. We had visitors in the winter, but we had no local bald eagles. And Peter and I of DEC in 1976 went to the Tongass National Forest in Alaska, and for the next 12 years, he would bring nestling eagles. A nest that had three, he would take one. Over those 12 years, he brought those eagles back to the Hudson Valley, where they were hacked, which means they were artificially fledged. And from those eagles of those 12 years, we pretty much have all of our eagles today. You might wonder how we went from no nests till 1997 to where today we've got 40, 50, 60 nests.
Mm.
And we could trace most of those back to Alaskan eagles. Yeah.
All right. Well, Tracy, thank you.
There is another nest of eagles right here in Cobleskill, too. Somebody called up earlier from Seward.
Mm-hmm.
There's a nest right here east of town. There's
there might be
chicks there.
Here's a suggestion, if you don't mind, of just get on to ebird.org. The Cornell University and National Audubon Society and DEC operated site where you can record that. Go to ebird.org. Sign up and feed the data in. We love it.
New York State also keeps track of all the bald eagle nests. And within 3 or 4 miles from where I live, we've had 3 new bald eagle nests this year.
Hmm.
They're just popping up all over the place.
That's great news.
And so as the density increases, we were talking earlier about what the territories are. The territories shrink when the density of birds increases. So now we've got nests that are within a quarter of a mile or less of each other.
All right. Let's go over to Jim in Adams, Mass. Jim, you're on.
Good afternoon. Yay, Ray.
Hi.
Yes, we have 3 sites where ravens nest in northern Berkshire County over here in Massachusetts. We have one nesting area, and that's, I think it's the original one since they came back in this area. It was in a little section of Cheshire called Farnham's, Cheshire, Massachusetts. Up in Adams, Massachusetts, here in my hometown, we have a nesting site up on, they call Ragged Mountain, which is just to the right of Mount Greylock when you face it from Adams. And we have another nesting site up in Savoy, Mass. Yesterday afternoon, my wife and I were at the local Walmart in North Adams. Mm-hmm. Just as we were getting in our car, I saw this huge silhouette of a black, well, I looked black because I could only see the silhouette of it against the sky coming over from the Dragon Mountain area. And I first thought I was going to see some kind of a hawk or an eagle. But then it came over and went over the parking lot, and I could see it was all black. And I said, that's too big to be a crow. I thought it might be a raven, and it flew over up to the northern edge of the Walmart parking lot, and then it was down on the little one of the little dividing strips between the sections of the parking lot and looking around for whatever trash or rubbish or food it could pick up, I guess. And I could that be a large crow? When I saw it from the side profile, its head, the beak was quite thick from top to bottom and looked black, at least on top. Could that be some kind of a large crow that's still in this area, is going to migrate out of here at the end of this winter finally, or is that a raven?
No, I didn't hear
any vocalization, so I couldn't identify what it was.
Well, I'm confident that you are on a raven. A raven is actually a large crow, so and they are in the Berkshires. They are in area, so feel free. E-bird it.
Okay, well, thank you.
Adult ravens are wonderful parents, too. I remember a time up in the Adirondacks at the Adirondack Lodge. My wife and I watched adult ravens with a nestling teaching it the proper way to steal hot dogs off of our picnic table. It was they appear to be great parents.
Audacious.
What is the proper way to steal a hot dog off the picnic
table? Be a raven.
Yeah, all right.
The adults would distract us. And when we were looking the other way, here comes Junior. And there goes our hot dog.
Rich has always said crows are very smart. And
I'll
ravens are very smart.
And fish crows, the tiny little crow that is also a newcomer in the area, will do the same thing. I've watched them distract the pigeons on a railroad bridge in the Hudson Valley. And the one pair would go in, distract the pigeons, and the other one would go in from the other direction, grab the eggs, and fly off.
Doesn't that indicate a certain level of intelligence?
Yeah, crows are that way.
It's all instinctive, though. It's not like they're actually thinking. I think it's just...
Oh, yeah.
They're programmed that way.
All right, over to Donna in Wappingers Falls. Donna, you're on.
Hi. There's a very great independent lens story on crows and how smart they are and how they teach their children who to hate and who to harass.
Yeah, that was a fascinating study out in Washington. And I can vouch for that in my own backyard where my local crows know me and know my neighbors. They come when I come out the door.
They like you and not your neighbors.
They come out the door when they see me. When I come out the door, they fly in. My neighbors, they fly away. It's the way life is.
I talk nice to them when I see them.
Well, be nice to crows. They deserve it.
Yes, yes. Anyway, I had 2 questions. The bluebirds, so I have to measure the hole because 2 years in a row we had some activity, but they didn't stay and clean it out. You have to clean it out every year?
It's a good idea.
Okay. And mockingbirds, I haven't seen any.
Again, they're...
I love them.
Yeah, they're a good bird. Mockingbirds, again, they're at the edge of their... northern edge of their range. And they have their years, their good years and not so good years. So I think they're in between years.
I have a bald eagle story.
We have to kind of move it along here, maybe on the next program. Oh. But go ahead.
Oh, okay.
Tom?
Thank you.
Well, I was thinking how all of our conversations have been about various species of wildlife. And one of the things that we should all remember is that wildlife is ambivalent. They don't like you. They don't dislike you. The only reaction you get from them is they don't trust you. Oftentimes, we give wildlife, particularly eagles, human emotions, human reactions. And everything they do, whether it's an eel, whether it's a fish, whether it's an eagle, is really instinctive.
Hmm.
We should remember that when we give them a little too much credit.
Okay. Doug in Catskill, you're on.
Hello.
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 Sorry about that. I wasn't sure I was on. All the bald eagle talk got me inspired to call. About 20 years ago, I was a bald eagle nest watcher in Arizona for a spring and winter. So I'm very familiar with the birds. And I just wanted to comment on something I saw a couple weeks ago. Over the Easter weekend, I was in Long Island, and the relative I was with said, "Hey, we have a eagle nest right here in town." And right in the middle of this, you know, very busy Long Island town, in the parking lot of a hotel was an eagle nest. It was like a main attraction. People were driving in constantly to see the birds. And I just found that to be interesting because, you know, that they, you know, we put such an emphasis on not disturbing the birds when they nest anywhere else, you know, in every other instance that I've been around them. And these birds were right in the middle of a very busy intersection in a hotel parking lot. They didn't seem to be bothered at all by the people who were coming and going, and I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
The thing to remember about that is the eagles chose to be there. We've seen bald eagle nests on trees overlooking a house. In certain places, they're on big trees on golf courses with golfers going by hitting golf balls, and they choose to be there. So in this instance, that's okay, and they don't feel like you're disturbing them. It's when we go and we seek them out when they have chosen to be in a more isolated area that we have to be a little more sensitive.
Eagles have their individual personalities, you might say, and it's up to them. And sometimes they, you know, they pick a place that, like, let's say a park or a golf course before the heavy season comes in. Robins and bluebirds will do the same thing. They're not realizing that in March it's empty, but in May and June it will be loaded with people. But they made the choice. Once they lay their eggs, they become glued to that spot. So they may not be back the next year, but they'll stick around that 1 year.
Eagles are amazing. If you go down along the Hudson River, you'll often find them perched on a branch right over the railroad tracks. And Amtrak will go steaming by, and it doesn't ruffle a feather. Yet that same eagle and that same branch, if an ATV or a trail bike or a motorboat's going up and down the river with that loud start and stop, those are the kinds of noises that disturb them.
They become accustomed to their environment, and some things are acceptable and some things are not, and it's all up to the individual.
All right, only a minute or two left here. Let's go to Mona in Bern. Mona, you're on.
Oh, hi. I just want to let you know that all the chickadees are at my house.
There you go, Mona. We love you.
I have zillions and zillions of chickadees. When I go outside, they practically pick me up like Snow White and fly off.
Also, you'd be nice to them.
We have a lot of ravens, too.
Ravens?
Yeah, and Bern.
And Bern.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, the ravens have...
We're up in Partridge Run. Do you know where Partridge Run is?
Most certainly do. That's in southwestern Albany County, and it's a great, great area.
Yes, and that's why, I suppose. There's so many trees that, you know, we just have wonderful birds. But
I
the chickadees are here all the time, all day long. I feed them all day. So that's where they all are.
Well, we love you for that.
I appreciate the call. Okay, Tom Lake, what's next for you? Where are you headed?
Well, I'll be out. The Hudson River is my office. People ask me what my office is, and that it begins at the high peaks of the Adirondacks and extends out to the Atlantic Ocean. So depending on what's happening, most of what I do is under the title of educator. And so I talk to school groups. I talk to other groups of people. And as Rich said, this time of the year, we're watching the young eels coming in from the sea. We're monitoring them, watching bald eagles and how the nests are making out, and just heralding the arrival of these fish in from the sea to spawn.
Well, it was great fun having you on the program. Rich Guthrie, you wanted to mention a couple of things.
And that's Alan DeVoe Bird Club is having their annual dinner, and guess who'll be there for speaking? And that will
be
not
Rich Guthrie.
Myself,
with
indeed.
The famous Cuban discussion?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah?
Yeah. And it's going to be on the 21st of April at Cozell's in Columbia County, New York.
All right. That
and
sounds
then
good.
Further down, mark your calendars, May 25 through 27, it'll be Taking Flight. And this is the Catskill Center for the Environment, and that will be down in Mount Tremper, New York, a weekend with Scott Whittle and Tom Stevenson being the guest stars, and I'll tag along. I'll be there. I'll be doing a program about the the birds down
there. And what is Taking Flight? What's the subject?
It's a celebration of the birds of the Catskill Mountains, New York. And with field trips and programs and a dinner and a guest speaker, that would be Tom Stevenson and Scott Whittle, and myself as one of the panelists in a discussion group.
Well, that's beautiful. Now, Rich, we've had a couple of people write us and say they can't find your blog. Is it still available?
It is. It is. I'm overdue. I got to get the pictures. And right now my computer is
kaput. Well, how do people find it, first of all?
TimesUnion.com. Look at the blogs. And you can go back to April 1st of a year ago and have a lot of fun
Look
with that.
Look for birding, or how do we
birding,
find it?
Birding, B-I-R-D-I-N-G.
And if people want to email you directly, what is your email address?
My simple. It's my name, Richard P. as in Peter Guthrie, at gmail.com.
Well, thank you both for being here, Tom and Rich, and hopefully you both be back again soon.
Rich, thanks for inviting me, and Ray, thanks for having me. Appreciate
nice
it.
To have
my
you here.
My pleasure.
Support comes from Pelham Auto Service at the Amherst Belchertown line, located by the sign of the Flying Pig, a worker-owned and operated service repairing foreign cars since 1972. PelhamAuto.com. The Preservation League of New York State, Albany, partnering in preserving historic New York through advocacy, education, grants, and loans, so our past has a future. PreserveNYS.org. At Nine Pin Cider, Albany, hard cider made from local apples. Tasting room features New York cider, beer, wine, spirits, open Tuesday through Sunday, now available in Massachusetts and Connecticut. NinePinCider.com. Thanks again to Rich Guthrie and Tom Lake for joining us. Thank you for some great calls today. Apologies if we didn't get to you. There's only so much time in the show. We'll try to get you in next time. Thank you for emailing as well. Zach Malloy was our engineer. Your phones were answered by Carol Lapani. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, have your laptops, tablets, and other technological devices handy for the computer show. Right now, stand by for news.